This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Leaders of some of the biggest social media companies sat before a Senate Judiciary Committee hearing last week that included representatives of TikTok, Discord, X, formerly Twitter, Meta, and Snap. Senators questioned and, in some cases, chastised the technology company officials about their efforts to protect young users from things like harassment, sexual exploitation, and other dangerous or manipulative content. In one exchange, Meta's Mark Zuckerberg faced a grilling from Republican Senator Josh Hawley from Missouri about Facebook and Instagram's efforts.
So you didn't take any action. You didn't take any action. You didn't fire anybody. You haven't compensated a single victim. Let me ask you this. There's families of victims here today. Have you apologized to the victims? Would you like to do so now?
Well,
they're here. You're on national television. Would you like now to apologize to the victims who have been harmed by your product? Show them the pictures. Would you like to apologize for what you've done to these good people?
Zuckerberg then stood up, turned around, and addressed families in the gallery, saying, quote, "I'm sorry for everything you have all been through. This is why we invest so much and are going to continue doing industry-leading efforts to make sure that no one has to go through the types of things that your families have had to suffer." The business leaders are also asked whether they supported a bipartisan bill co-sponsored by Senators Marsha Blackburn, a Tennessee Republican, and Richard Blumenthal, Connecticut Democrat, who say the law would direct social media companies to do more to protect kids. The bill is called the Kids Online Safety Act. We're going to talk about how it might or might not achieve some of those goals. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think social media platforms, the way they handle kids' safety, has gotten any better over the years? Do you have questions about security features already available on social media platforms? Do you think there ought to be a law when it comes to kids and social media? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Steve Knoll is digital and social media marketing professor at Madison College. Steve, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
We've seen various reports lately, Steve, trying to track the impact of social media on kids, kids being exploited online, things like that. How big a problem do you perceive this to be right now?
Well, it certainly is a big problem. It's been a big problem for a long time, and I see that it's going to continue to be a big problem. And, you know, it's unfortunate because, you know, we're talking about big companies, we're talking about big money, we're talking about personal freedom, freedom of speech, a lot of big ideas, regulation of industries. You know, these are some pretty provocative and strong subjects for people to really, you know, think about. And, you know, we're seeing a lot of political grandstanding with this event. You know, people like the clip that you played earlier. You know, it's unfortunate. A lot of the, you know, the ideas of like regulating companies goes completely contrary to, you know, the Republicans who are up there trying to get on TV by trying to throw Mark Zuckerberg underneath the bus, you know. And at the same point, you know, Zuckerberg himself is the face of the company and especially Instagram. And he really hasn't done a lot publicly, and his apology was really pretty empty. So, you know, at the end of the day, we see a lot of people trying to get on TV, trying to get on the media to show off how cool they are. And at the end of the day, they're not doing anything, and the kids are going to keep suffering.
Now, we've got this Kids Online Safety Act proposed. It gives authority to a federal agency, and I think, at least in one recent version, to state attorneys general to require changes to monitor social media companies. I've seen widely varying opinions on these proposals, to say the least. Steve, what do you see as the key elements? What do you think of it?
Well, you know, and again, a lot of this is politics. A lot of this is, it's a lot of hot air to, you know, get their names out there because they're up for re-election. But I also look at this and go, okay, if we pass this law in theory, which I don't think they could ever agree to actually pass it, how would you enforce this? You know, what would prevent a 16-year-old from logging into a social network and saying they're 18? You know, right now that happens. We could say, well, we're going to put parental controls on social media accounts, so the parents need to verify it. Right now, you know, parents, They have parental controls on television sets so kids can't watch R-rated movies. Parents don't know how to use these, or they don't care. So unless we have a really big shift in our culture about enforcing this stuff, not from the legal regulatory issue, but from the, you know, hey, parents need to be more responsive, we're not going to see this change. Kids are going to find a way to get around it, and people are going to continue to, you know, it's like, you know, getting a fake ID so you can go into a bar when you're 20. That's been going on for decades. This is nothing new. It's never going to change. And if we say you have to be 18 to be on Instagram, someone will just get a fake ID so they can be on Instagram.
It, there's been some talk, Steve, of requiring proof of identity for that younger teen user if there's this age restriction in place. That's also raised concerns over people's ability to use the internet anonymously if that kid has to be identified by name and possibly other types of identifying information. Do you see any kind of like workable identity and age authentication system?
Wow, no. I do not. You know, part of that is that opens up a whole can of worms. I mean, you are literally saying we're going to put people on government controlled lists in order to get onto social media. Tell me how, you know, people in politics can get behind that type of concept of putting people on government mandated lists. You know, it might pass, but everyone will find ways to get around that. And really, at the end of the day, you're going to marginalize the people that really benefit from social media. You know, there's a lot of problems with social media, but there's a lot of advantages as well. And that's the stuff that people don't really talk about. You know, people who live in marginalized communities, facing a lot of discrimination, facing a lot of harassment, they can go onto social media and find, you know, friends and chosen family and people to support them that they may not get at home, at school, in the town they live on, you know, and we don't want to give that up. We don't want to say, well, we're going to take away all that stuff for this other thing. So this is very much a dual-edged sword. If we help one way, we're hurting another way. And just the logistics of it, the fact that the internet is so unregulated, and that's by design, you know, so that way the internet is for everybody, just runs contrary to, you know, 20, 25 years of this online social media environment.
Talking to Steve Knoll from Madison College, professor there of digital and social media marketing, looking at the big social media platforms, how kids interact with them for better or worse. Big hearing in Congress not too long ago, a push to have a new bill to regulate social media companies when it comes to kids. You could join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Steve, I think one concern isn't so much that, okay, if a kid goes looking for stuff on social media, they're going to find it. But as in terms of what social media platforms serve up to kids and the algorithms that point them toward different things, so that it might point kids toward things that might encourage anorexia or things like that, harassment, like the algorithms of social media companies, do you think there are things that platforms can do so that they're not pushing bad stuff to kids?
Yeah. See, now that's something that I think is actually doable. You know, it is possible for these social media companies to definitely pull back on some of the algorithms. And they have, I mean, and there has been some evidence. Snapchat, for example, is a social media company that heavily appeals to the teen crowd. And they're actually behind some of this legislation. They're endorsing it to try to, you know, keep all this stuff, you know, above the board and healthy and good for people. So I think, yes, I think social media companies, you know, especially Instagram, especially TikTok, can really do more internally to do that. But here again lies a big problem, is there's a lot of money involved in this. And, you know, the teen market is incredibly lucrative. You know, when we're talking about products that appeal to 15, 16, 17 year old, you know, you think of things like clothing, movies, cell phones, you know, all these companies want to advertise to that demographic. And in today's world, social media platforms are by far the best way to reach them. So it's hard to say this. You know, the tech companies could choose to do this, but then their shareholders are going to rebel and say, well, we're going to lose millions, if not billions of dollars of revenue for doing this. And at the end of the day, as we know, it's money is what runs the world. And if these tech companies, you know, are they willing to give up millions and billions of dollars, or are there other ways to do this responsibly? Therein lies the big question. I think they can go further, but at the same point too, I totally understand why they would be hesitant to do that.
Well, is that a case where the fear of new regulation, even if it doesn't ultimately pass Congress, the fear of new regulation might motivate companies to make that compromise?
Well, possibly, you know, but unfortunately, you look at things like, you know, the movie rating system, you know, G, PG, R, the television rating system, the video game rating system. These are all, you know, voluntarily internal industry regulations that were created as response to the government saying, hey, maybe we should regulate your industry. The problem, though, of course, is tell me what 16-year-old can't get into a movie theater that's for an R-rated movie, even though we've got this system in place that's not enforced. So even if social media companies come up with a rating system, how does it get enforced? There's probably no what they call teeth behind it to prevent it from, you know, letting people easily get around it.
We're talking about a bill in the U.S. Senate that sponsors say would better protect kids from threats on social media. Critics say it opens the door, among other things, to censorship. Steve Knoll is our guest, digital and social media marketing professor at Madison College. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions for our guest? If you are a parent or a young person yourself, love to hear your perspectives. How do you handle social media usage in your family? Have you encountered stuff, or your kid has encountered stuff, that you wish they hadn't? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Steve Knoll, digital and social media marketing professor at Madison College. We're talking about how social media companies do and don't protect young people online, and how a bill in Congress aims to help the situation. A lot of arguments about whether it would. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you want to see changes in federal regulation when it comes to social media, especially when it comes to kids? Do you have an experience to share from your own family? Join in at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in a caller. Michael is with us in Milwaukee. Hey, Michael.
Hi there. Good afternoon.
Hi. What'd you want to bring up?
Yeah, just wanted to bring up that I feel that one of the areas, probably the most important area to do some work with this, is dealing with YouTube. Primarily, I've seen the majority of things that you wouldn't want kids to have exposure to come through YouTube, either through shorts or, you know, just basically, you know, there are restrictions, but there's just not enough enforcement. And they put it in kids' cartoons on there. You know, I mean, it's just a free-for-all, I guess.
Michael, thanks a lot for the call and for bringing up YouTube, Steve, which I often forget when it comes to the social media conversation. It's one of the biggies. I don't know if Google, the owners of YouTube, are actually at that hearing. Your thoughts on YouTube and what ends up getting served up to kids?
Oh, I would completely agree with that. I mean, you know, YouTube is one of the biggest culprits in spreading malicious information, false information, untruths, you know, in the social media, you know, universe. And the fact that it is so easy, you know, Google really is the best when it comes to developing algorithms. You know, when we talk about these conversations, Facebook is always the company that gets the brunt of the accusation, but really Google is the one that really has this down to a science. And, you know, when they bought YouTube, that was brilliant because watching videos and listening to music is so much of a tell of people's personalities and habits, and the ability to mine that stuff and then serve them appropriate content really is quite genius and clever. However, yes, it is very, very easy to manipulate that. And even though Google's got some pretty decent parental controls on it, it's also fairly easy to get around that stuff. You know, they don't really require a lot of verification. You know, they push you to YouTube Premium, you know, their paid service if you want to get rid of the ads, but that doesn't necessarily get rid of the suggested content. So on one hand, they're saying, hey, parents, if you're worried about your kids, pay to subscribe to YouTube. Yeah, it gets rid of the ads, but you're still getting that curated content.
Thanks for the call, Michael. Tina is with us now in West Salem. Tina, hi.
Hi. Yeah, I'm old. I'm 62. And our oldest child is 42. Our youngest is 8. And I can tell you, if you think you are ever going to make a law or a regulation that is going to keep a kid from viewing, buying, playing, seeing any content, you're kidding yourself or you've never met a kid.
I got to ask, Tina, you've raised kids in the pre-internet generation and now in the internet generation. What was your learning curve like for, especially for the youngest? How did you tackle this stuff?
It's a wild, wild west. We all watched the stuff. We bought it. We looked at it. I can remember being 17 years old back east, going into bars. Still was always 21. Never had a problem. We would watch it, we would laugh about it, we would talk about it, we would talk about what's BS, what's not BS. But if you think you're going to keep anybody from seeing it, it's just, you've never met a teenager or a tweenager. And if you do put really good controls on Snapchat or whatever the newest thinger is, it'll suddenly become the uncool thing and the teens will leave it in droves.
Tina, thanks for the call. Steve, I feel like I heard you nodding along with Tina on a lot of that.
Oh, totally. And Tina, by the way, I think you're a pretty cool mom. So I would agree with that. I mean, the reality is kids will be kids. You know, if we go back decades ago, you know, I remember, you know, being in elementary school and other boys bringing in magazines that they got out of their dad's drawer. You know, it's no different. It's going to happen. And I think, you know, the fact that she's so open and just communicating with her kids and saying, hey, we know this stuff is out there, but let's have a conversation about what this is, how it affects you. And instead of trying to hide it, you know, try to get kids to like understand it and understand it with them. A lot of parents really take this, I've got a good kid, I'm going to put my head in the sand, my kid will never do that. I can tell you as a teacher that the kids who are raised that way are the worst ones who are out there doing it, and they're doing it in irresponsible ways. So by protecting your kids, by shielding them from this reality, you are hurting them in the long run. And, you know, that's something that a lot of parents don't like to hear. And it's unfortunate that more parents aren't just, you know, understanding that, hey, this stuff is out there. And, you know, educating kids, you know, it's like when growing up here in Wisconsin, you know, there was always alcohol in our house. But there was never like this big, you shouldn't drink this. You know, at Christmas time, you know, my dad was offering me a beer at age 14. Okay. Should he have done that? Maybe, maybe not. But it never gave me this like, oh, it's forbidden. So therefore, when he's not looking, I'm going to seek it out and have a whole bunch of them. You know, it was a once a year thing. And I think that lessons like that should be applied to subjects like this. Because, you know, we're not going to be able to regulate our way around this. And I think we really need a cultural shift if we really want to embrace this problem.
Thanks again for that call, Tina. Now, Steve, you mentioned you're teaching people, a generation that grew up with social media all around them. What kind of things are they asking you about, talking to you about when we have, you know, a Senate hearing like the one we kicked this off with?
Well, this actually was brought up in class last week. A student had actually read about this and wanted to talk about it in class. So students are familiar with it. They know this stuff is out there. And when I bring up the converse things like, you know, when you take a selfie with your cell phone edits the photo to make you look better. And then, you know, all cell phones, it's not just one brand. They use AI programs to, you know, smooth out your face and all that stuff. And students know this, you know, the 18-year-olds, the 19-year-olds, the 20-year-olds in my class, when I tell them this, they kind of look at me and go, yeah, everybody knows that. but you know, the 25, the 30-year-olds, they're like, what? This is a thing? So it seems like, you know, younger people are a lot smarter and more worldly than they're given credit for. And I think if just more people would talk to them and, you know, start this conversation at a younger age, you know, start this conversation, you know, a lot of these social media companies, you know, their youngest age is 13. If you want to be on Instagram, 13 is the youngest, you know, that's really when these conversations should start be having. You know, and the reality is what's going to prevent a 10-year-old from creating a Snapchat account and then just lying and saying they're 13?
Steve, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Oh, thanks, Rob. Appreciate it.
That's Steve Knoll, digital and social media marketing professor at Madison College. We talked to him about a legislative proposal in Congress that would require social media companies to do more to protect young people on the internet, some of the free speech and other concerns that critics of that bill have raised as well. Still time for you to share your thoughts, maybe the experiences you've had in your family. You can email ideas@WPR.org. That's ideas@WPR.org. Coming up tomorrow on The Morning Show with Kate Archer Kent, are heat pumps going to be the heating systems of the future? Find out what the technology is and why it's been seen as a more eco-friendly option. That's coming up tomorrow morning at 8 here on the Ideas Network.